start with, but
50-40.
Eric, are you good? Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for May 11th, 2015. We are gathered for the purpose of public hearing and work session on House Bill 5044, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, a fee ratification, and a work session on House Bill 5012, the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget. Mr. Stainer, would you make opening comments to get us going?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the first bill we're working on is House Bill 5044, and this is a fee ratification bill for the Department of Consumer Business Services. This bill, as amended, will approve the fees adopted by rule by the agency for the licensure of pharmacy benefit managers. And this was a bill that was passed by the 2013 legislature, House Bill 2023. The rule was adopted and became effective on July 21st, 2014. It establishes a fee of $50 for the initial fee and a renewal of $50. And the agency has projected about total 2015-17 revenue of $3,550.
Okay. This is a work session. Eric, was there a sign-up sheet?
Yes.
Was anyone moved for the spirit of...
No.
Okay. All right. The record should note that no one signed up to testify, in which case we have no public hearing. Colleagues, any questions for Mr. Stainer?
I just have a general question since I'm new here. The bill is just a series of blanks, and so is that typical for what we're going to see, that we get a blank bill with blank spaces for blank and blank?
Okay.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Whitsitt, the bill was a bill that we use in the Legislative Fiscal Office. There's a number of bills that we keep on hand.
Great.
And since the fee ratification bill didn't get put in at the beginning of the session, we're using one of those blank bills and we're amending those.
Okay.
And your amendment should be attached to your work session paper.
Right. So just to put a finer point on it, you will know what the numbers are, but the bill format that you were given has those blanks.
Right.
Follow-up?
Yes, I just wasn't seeing in the amendment where it refers to pharmacy.
Madam Chair, Representative Whitsitt, on page 1, line 6.
So under the pharmacy benefit manager application fee, those two things fulfill what we need then for the entirety of the bill? Okay, great.
Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this a new fee, or is this an increase of existing fee, or what?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, this is a new fee, but it was requested that the agency establish this fee in House Bill 2023 from the 2013 session.
And can I follow?
Follow, Representative Nierman.
What's the usage of these fees? What are they intended to be used for?
Would you like the agency to come up?
No,
okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, there's a number of benefit management companies exist already. I think a little over 600, between 600 and 700 that the agency current licenses. But this is a specific licensing type to manage pharmacy benefit management, so type of insurance.
They pass the
That the agency has been asked to license and regulate by the legislature.
So if there's 500 of them at $50 each, I guess that's not going to be a lot of money.
Please,
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Stainer.
Representative, no. As a matter of fact, this is a subset of those original numbers I talked about. There's actually a far fewer numbers, 69 of them, that the agency believes it would be regulated, licensed, and regulated. So the number is a very small amount.
Okay.
Representative Nierman.
What's the purpose then of the? So it's not to raise funds because it's not really hardly raising enough. Is it? What's the purpose of having the fee?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, that one I would really have to turn.
We're going
to
ask the agency to come forward, Mr. Allen. Please sign in.
I was confused.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, I'm the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The fee is basically to defray the costs of establishing and maintaining the certification program that the bill requires. So there's a little bit of staff time, a little bit of IT time to basically comply with your direction from 2 years ago to certify these organizations.
Follow up, Representative Nierman.
So that's by my calculation, if he's saying there's 60-ish kind of, that's certainly less than $5,000 that you'll bring in. So is that enough money to do to defray those costs?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, we calculate the fee on the basis of what's the cost necessary or what's the revenue necessary to fulfill the intent of the program, and so it's a very low cost program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allen. You might want to just stay there, or not.
I'll wait back there.
That's fine. All right. So, before we proceed any further, let me just note for the record that Representative Gomberg is testifying on a bill and will be joining us as soon as he is able. So, colleagues, you have heard the LFO explanation of the bill and. The LFO recommendation undoubtedly is amending the bill to reflect the fees as adopted by the agency. I would be happy to entertain a motion to that effect. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Reed has moved the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation. Any questions?
Is that the Dash 1 amendment?
It will become the Dash 1 amendment, yes. Yes. Okay, any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Okay. And now I would be happy to entertain a motion for the Dash 1 amendments.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Reed has moved the Dash 1 amendments. Colleagues, any questions, any discussions, any objections? The Dash 1s are adopted. And now I would take a final motion, Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I move the bill with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Reed moves House Bill 5044 to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation as amended. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? The bill moves forward to full, and now we need carriers. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair.
Would you like to do it on the...
I'd be honored.
Full and the House?
Sure.
And...
We can take the Senate.
Senator Monroe volunteers on the Senate. Okay, so we will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 5044, the Department of Consumer and Business Services fee ratification, and open a work session on House Bill 5012, the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget. And once again, turn to you, Mr. Stainer, to give us the introduction to the budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The House Bill 5012 is the budget bill for the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and this bill is a little special. We've got the addition of the health insurance marketplace with DCBS with the passage of Senate Bill 1. The LFO recommended budget is $458,457,406 in total funds, 962 positions with 952.57 FTE. We're going to go through each one of these items with the agency's budget, but I'm going to go through just as an overview the recommendations from the LFO for the Office of Consumer and Business Services contain funding for the continuation of the agency's activities at the current service level, additional expenditure limitation to accommodate actions adopted by the Emergency Board, increased personnel capacity for workload increases in the workers' compensation, Oregon OSHA, Insurance and Building Codes Divisions, the move of 11 positions comprising 10.04 FTE from non-limited to limited funds, a correction of expenditure limitation to allow for federal revenues to be expended as federal funds, and the budgetary implementation of Senate Bill 1, which is the health insurance, Oregon health insurance marketplace. So attached to this memorandum, there should be your LFO report, LFO 102 report, which shows all of the detail of the LFO recommendations. And we're going to go through these program by program. And some of these overlap. You're going to find that things like the correction of federal fund expenditures are going to be in multiple programs. You're going to find there's pieces of the health insurance marketplace. They're both in Central Services Division as well as in the health insurance marketplace. and that's to allow positions that are providing the kind of accounting and HR functions related to the health insurance marketplace to reside in the proper place in the management structure of the agency. So the first program that we have for DCBS is their workers' compensation non-limited accounts. The budget continues the non-limited accounts at $1,478,000 for workers' compensation, and then with no change in the budget from last biennium. And then we go into the workers' benefit fund. The workers' benefit fund does contain a policy option package 803. And this package moves the positions and funding for 11 positions, which is the 10.04 FTE, from other funds non-limited in the workers' benefit fund to other funds limited in the central services program. These positions are used for accounting and accounts receivable functions for premium assessments, for certain premium assessments from workers' compensation insurance, and health insurance micro-based programs. The cost of the positions are allocated to each program on a pro-rata basis, and funding from each program is transferred to the Central Services Operating Fund within the Consumer and Services Business Fund from the non-limited accounts. However, the last biennium, these were budgeted directly from the non-limited accounts, and as a general rule, regular anticipated expenditures are not budgeted from non-limited funds, and so that's why these are being moved out of the non-limited funds and into the limited. It's a net zero impact to the agency's budget. So moving on, we're into the Workers' Compensation Board, and the Workers' Compensation Board does not have any policy option packages. We continue other funds expenditure at the current service level. The Workers' Comp Division is our next program, and we're on page 6 of 31, if you're following along. The Workers' Comp Division does have a policy option package. This is package 101. This is an increase in disability disputes. When an insurer closes a claim for a disability award, that award can be disputed. The appellate review program of the Workers' Compensation Division then has an 18-day deadline for resolving the dispute, and that can be extended under certain circumstances. The review of the dispute is not completed. If it's not completed in that statutory time frame of 18 days or within the extension, the insurer's notice of closure is affirmed by default. In 2010, the agency processed 2,978 disputes with 16 FTE allocated to the review program. The legislative adopted budget for 11-13 removed 36 of these positions, including from workers' compensation altogether, including six from this particular program. Based on projections of an increased number of claims, DCBS projects a 10% increase in workload in this function and has asked for an additional FTE to accommodate that, and this includes one FTE to do that. It's budgeted at 22 months in this biennium, but will roll up to 24 months in the following biennium. Additionally, in Workers' Comp Division, Package 102 transfers a certain amount of revenue from the Workers' Compensation Division to Oregon OSHA to fund the restoration of two permanent full-time positions, and we'll talk of those. They're just under $500,000, but we'll give you more detail on that. Those positions will get into Oregon OSHA, which is our next program. So this package increases Package 102 again, but in the Oregon OSHA program. This package increases the capacity of Oregon OSHA to perform enforcement inspections and safety consultations. Had a reduction of 14 occupational safety specialists and one industrial hygienist's positions in the 11-13 budget due to the economic turndown and reduced revenues. This reduction resulted in a decrease in the average annual enforcement inspection rate by 980 inspections. So this package is going to re-establish three of those positions. Two of them are occupational safety specialists, and one of them is the industrial hygienist position, and it's a total of $498,000, 444 other funds. Moving on, in this program as well, in Oregon OSHA, there's been, for the past few biennia, they've been recognizing federal funds and then using those, but then expending those federal funds as other funds, and that's been, that had been approved by the LFO and by BAM. But just to make those expenditures clear, we're removing those federal funds from the other funds expenditure limitation and having the agency now expend those as federal funds. This allows us to have a clear vision of the agency from revenue to expenditure in the federal funds program. It's a net zero to the agency's budget, so it's just removing $11 million from other funds and establishing $11 million in federal funds. Moving on to the insurance division, we've got a couple of packages that deal with e-board actions. The first one is package 80 from the May 2014 e-board. And this package is adjust the agency's budget for the May 2014 emergency board, providing $121,672 in other funds limitation for the upward classifications of two positions as approved by the e-board. That reclassification was already approved by the e-board, but it was done prior to these positions being rolled forward into the budget process. And so this package now has to just make a little adjustment into that budget for those two positions to allow for the upward classification that was approved by the e-board to roll into the agency's budget for the biennium. All right. And then package 81 is for the September 2014 e-board. The September e-board, there was the agency came forth and to apply for a rate review cycle for grants, federal grants. That grant application was approved by the e-board and limitation was established, but the agency knew they were only going to spend less than $300,000 of these funds within the current biennium. And so during the e-board process, that was the amount of limitation that was provided to them, with the understanding that when the budget process for the 15-17 biennium came up, that the remaining funds from the grant would be established. And these are those remaining grant funds, which are about $923,000 of federal funds. And that allows them to continue two positions that were established in the current service level package 021, a phase-in of positions. It allows them to continue those two other positions for another 12 months each. The next position in the insurance division is package 103. This is market regulation. The insurance division experienced an increase in workload during the past 6 years. This increase required the agency to request additional positions for the consumer advocacy, market regulation, and rates and forms programs. The May 2014 meeting of the emergency board approved a plan to repurpose and reclassify two existing positions. This is one, the two positions that we talked about having to have the additional expenditure authority for them in package 80. And also a third position it established a limited duration compliance specialist position into, they had a third position in that as well. And rather than just giving that to them as a permanent position in the e-board, the agency was asked to bring that position back and ask for that third position. And that's what they've done in this package of market regulation. So LFO is recommending that position be established. The next package we're dealing with is package 801. And this is a small technical adjustment in insurance. What it does is, again, going back to the rate review grants, we have cycles 1, 2, 3, and 4. We're dealing with 3 is a phase-in to the agency's budget in this cycle. We're also dealing with cycle 4 in the previous package that we saw. One of the things that the agency did is the cycle 2 grant funds, they were anticipating not expending as much as of those funds as they did in the current biennium, and so they wanted to carry those forward in the 15-17 upcoming biennium. It turns out that those expenditures did happen in the 13-15 biennium, and so that portion of those funding, that portion at $637,000, is not required in the 15-17. So this package, all this does is it just reduces that federal funds limitation for the portion that's not going to be required in the 15-17 biennium. Package 802, again, this is a federal funds expenditure limitation. This is where we're reducing the other funds limitation so that those funds can be expended as federal funds, as they were in the Oregon OSHA program. And then we move on to our new program, the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace. And this pop in the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace, this covers 24 positions and 24 FTE. A number of these positions are limited duration positions. And let me just read through this description. It's a little bit lengthy, and if we have questions, feel free to stop me at your
leisure. Which page are you on?
I'm on page 20 of 31. And this package just deals with the budget for the health insurance marketplace at this program level. There's another component to this, and we'll get to that as we get into the central services program. But this, the purpose of this package is to provide the budgetary framework for the implementation of Senate Bill 1. And this is the establishment of the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace, the Department of Consumer Business Services. The amounts included in the package reflect the best estimates of available revenues and projected expenditures for the agencies involved, and that includes OHA, DH, and DCBS. The package intends to provide a high level of flexibility and capacity for DCBS to seamlessly transition the health insurance marketplace into the agency's operation. However, it's also assumed that the actual expenditures, particularly IT professional service contracts, legal fees, this kind of thing, it may vary substantially, and therefore it's anticipated that the budget will be adjusted as necessary during the 2016 legislative session. So because this is just getting going, LFO anticipates that during the rebalance process that is normally done for OHA and a number of agencies in the short session, that there will be a rebalance for this program as well.
Mr. Stainer, for the benefit of our new folks, why don't you just explain how a rebalance goes? That we're not reopening the bill, we're not just, if you could give them the framework so they understand what the words mean.
That's correct. When we, the budget process allocates funds in very specific silos that we call SCRs or summary cross-references and detail cross-references. And when we do that, often the agency's actual operations vary from the budgeted operations. And so it, from time to time, agencies, the legislature comes back in and rebalances those monies between silos, or in the case where there's insufficient funding in a particular silo, additional funding is added.
I have a question.
Representative Woodson.
Will we get the legislature or this committee, whomever, an update as we go along with this? Because we're talking about this is our best estimate of, you know, how things are going to go. So will we have to wait for another full biennial cycle, or will we get an update periodically with how this is going, this transfer?
I would ask Mr. Stainer's correction if I'm wrong. You'll get an update, but maybe not in this format. There will be interim committees, and I don't know because I don't think leadership's exactly decided what the framework of the interim committees are, but the agency will report to LFO. Okay. And then the rebalance largely happens within LFO, and it goes to an appropriate committee in the interim, and then that's how it happens.
Yeah,
have I lied about anything?
No, Madam Chair, Representative Wizard, no, that's mostly correct. That's the only difference is that it eventually does make it into a piece of legislation that does get passed.
Yes.
I just want to make sure for the record that the legislature, kind of as a whole body, is aware of how this transfer, you know, how things are going forward, so we don't have any surprises in 2 years, basically.
Madam Chair, Representative Whitsitt, we don't have a formal mechanism for that. There's no formal mechanism put up for that. I would say that the Director Allen and his staff have been more than forthcoming about information on this transition, and I believe that they really intend to keep the legislature constantly apprised of.
Great. Mr. Allen, I invite you up.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Woodson, I just wanted to point out Senate Bill 1, by its terms, actually builds in quite a bit of interim reporting to the legislature, to the committees that deal with health care. There's a specific requirement that if I spend, I think it's over $1 million on anything related to IT, I have to personally notify each of you, all 90 of you personally. I have to notify each of you individually. And I would expect whatever interim Ways and Means Committee is appropriate that I'll be there will very much desire to be here regularly, updating you on our progress.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I keep them?
Representative Nierman.
Thanks, and thanks, Mr. Allen, for this. So, when I was on the IT committee, The Oregon Health Authority had an IT budget for, I believe it was like $62 million to kind of overhaul Cover Oregon. And at the time, I asked them, I said, well, all you're really doing is putting a face on the federal exchange so that we can keep our subsidies. So you got to put an Oregon front page on it there. And they said, no, we have to do a whole bunch of stuff with Medicaid and all that. So that means that what you're left with, and so you can correct me if I'm wrong here, is you're just going to put a front page on the federal exchange, right? I mean, it's probably a little bit more complicated than that, but that doesn't sound like $30 million worth of work. So help me out there.
Sure. So Chair Johnson, Representative Nierman, a couple of things. The $60-odd million figure at the Health Authority, if memory serves, is actually their project to transition from the shared back end that Cover Oregon and the Health Authority currently use to manage their book of business to the Kentucky system that they're going to be using for Medicaid going forward. There's a piece of our budget in 13-15 that is shared licensing and services related to that partially implemented system that doesn't involve a front end that faces consumers but does involve a back end. When all of that is disentangled, what remains is the responsibility to manage a state-based marketplace, which is much more than just a website, and it will include the responsibility to identify and make use of whatever our website is. We expect that to, it is currently the federal platform. We expect that to be the federal platform for the 2016 plan year, but we also anticipate within about a year being in a position to make further recommendations about what sort of a platform we would use, whether it's in other states or moving to Kentucky, like as the Medicaid system has, or continuing with the federal government. We think that set of circumstances will change, not least because there's a Supreme Court case that could cloud whether being on that federal platform has an impact on tax credits. But the work that goes into managing the program is everything around certification of plans and carriers on the plans, promotion and outreach related to getting people to sign up for insurance. All of the work around interacting with the platform and with the carriers to make sure that things like commissions are getting paid and that carriers are certified and on the system and all those sorts of things. So that's where you get that the full impact of that program. The $30 million figure is a little bit inflated right now, partly because of transitional costs and partly because of this shared platform that we get funds from OHA to help pay for.
Representative Whitson.
So, just so we understand, are we looking at somewhere close to $100 million to make this a nice, smooth system onto the Kentucky platform? And
yes, Chair Johnson, Representative Woodson, no, I don't think that's quite accurate. I would say there's an operating budget and there's a project budget. OHA has a project budget to move themselves to the Kentucky system. And that's their budget, and they're much more conversant about it than I am. But I believe that's the $60-odd million figure that Representative Nierman was referring to. And that's the discrete project from now until the beginning of next year to get them on the Kentucky system. We have a two-year, $30 million budget that's the actual operating budget for the marketplace functions that we're absorbing from Cover Oregon. And so it's not really appropriate to add those two together for a single purpose. They're related to the same general topic, but one is a two-year operating budget and one is a discrete project. Is that helpful?
I would just follow up and say it's all going to the same purpose.
Well, Chair Johnson, Representative Woodson, if you want to describe the purpose as healthcare, in that context, I would say it's Medicare, it's Medicaid, and private health insurance, and in my world, those are two different things done by different folks.
Thank you.
Okay, you may retreat.
Go ahead, Mr. Staley. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Moving on, we're biennial revenues in this package assume beginning balance transfer of $8.24 million upon the dissolution of Cover Oregon, premium assessment revenue of about $21.2 million, and a transfer of $13.2 million from the Oregon Health Authority for the information technology professional services contract obligations. The budget expenditures in this package for DCBS are divided between the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace Program, which we're talking about right now, and the Central Services Program. The Central Services Program establishes four permanent positions, providing ongoing direct fiscal administrative support to the health exchange. In addition, five limited duration information specialist positions comprising 2.5 FTE and one limited duration security analyst position to half an FTE are budgeted in the Central Services Program to facilitate the transition of information technology systems during the first year of the biennium. Including the services and supplies expenditures, additional expenditure limitation provided to the Central Services Program in the package for the direct cost of the health insurance marketplace are $1.951 million. Although not included in the package, the budgeted indirect cost agencies will also be assessed to the marketplace and transferred to the Central Services function of about $1.2 million. And those are standard shared services that are redistributed across the entire agency. The Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace Program itself is comprised of the marketplace function and the call center function. The package provides other funds expenditure limitation for 13 limited duration positions and associated services supplies for the call center function, and then 11 permanent positions in the marketplace function. All of the call center positions and the majority of the marketplace functions are filled with incumbent employees, and in this budget, they're budgeted at their actual rate. The package includes a revenue transfer, as we spoke before, of $13.2 million from Oregon Health Authority for the payment of roughly 90% of the budgeted information technology professional services contract obligations assumed by DCBS from Cover Oregon. And exclusive of the OHA portion of the IT professional services contracts, the biennial budget of the marketplace program totals just over $20 million, with roughly $3.5 million budgeted in one-time only costs, including $1 million for tax credit estimate errors that the agency inherited from Cover Oregon, and $900,000 for the move of IT equipment, $800,000 for lease termination costs in the Durham office complex. The package includes other fund expenditure limitations of $2,307,000 for marketing, publicity, and promotion during the biennium. It's the intent of the legislature that this is the maximum amount to be expended by this for the purpose of marketing and outreach promotions. Before there's a budget note, and we'll get to the budget note here in a minute, talking about a plan for the ongoing marketing of the agency. And this is part of that rebalance that we spoke of before. This is the intent is not to limit the marketing for the agency for the biennium, but just to provide greater than 50% for the current year and then have it rebalance with the agency's need according to their plans that they bring forth to the legislature prior to the 2016 biennium. This package provides for an estimated ending fund balance of $8,960,802, and it's based on the estimated ongoing expenditures of the program. It's about 12.7 months of operating revenues.
I have a question.
Representative Whitsett.
Is the $1 million for tax credit estimate errors those credits that were given to people who thought that they got a refund or got a refund from the Cover Oregon, the tax? Is that what that is, the $1 million for tax credit estimate errors?
Mr. Allen, one more time.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Representative Whitsett, during the open enrollment period for 2014, Cover Oregon made an undetermined number of errors in the calculation of people's tax credits when they quoted them a premium. When people do their taxes, it is anticipated that they would determine that there was an error that was made. They would contact Cover Oregon. We established an expedited claims process for them to be able to be compensated for things like interest on making payments on your taxes due or the setup fee or those kinds of things. And that $1 million is the money that's been set aside to make payments on those claims.
Okay. Follow up. I'm just going through on page 27. $900,000 for the move of IT equipment and $805,000 for lease termination for the office building. Where are you going then? Or
Yeah, Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, the Cover Oregon currently occupies offices in the town of Durham, which, if you're not familiar, is a little burg tucked between Tigard and Tualatin, right off I-5. The marketplace functions in DCBS are being set up here in the state-owned building at the Labor and Industries building in space that we've made available by shrinking the footprint of our existing uses of the building. We are working on trying to find alternative occupants for the remainder of the lease term in Durham. It is actually a reasonably attractive lease in terms of payments, and we've actually been partially successful doing that. The budget was written, though, at a time when we weren't sure what that was going to be, and that would be the early termination fee that would be charged by the landlord if we simply walked away from the lease as we're entitled to do under lease terms and state law, but with that fee. We're trying to avoid paying that fee.
So what kind of IT equipment costs $1 million to move, essentially, a computer system?
Yeah, Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, I can only be so articulate on this topic. There are a mix of Cover Oregon has a number of systems, some of which have to do with the failed platform that's been in the news, many of which are things like PeopleSoft and payroll and those kinds of things, and so those costs largely have to do with the relocation to state data center or other state service providers for direct IT costs, as well as decommissioning costs for systems that we're simply going to be able to walk away from. PeopleSoft is a great example. We don't use PeopleSoft in state government. We use the state budgeting and personnel systems, and we'll be moving all of those functions to existing state systems, and we'll be able to move off of PeopleSoft. But there will be archiving and other kinds of costs related to abandoning those systems that we will need to be able to absorb. When you add all that up, some of it's physical location, some of it's hardware, some of it's work necessary to do that decommissioning.
Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you have an expenditure of $2.3 million for advertising. What's the objective of the advertising?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Johnson, Representative Nierman. Our budget is actually, over the course of the biennium, $4 million for what I would characterize as outreach and marketing. Advertising is a piece of that, but it's also the direct outreach to communities of color, disadvantaged communities, populations that are hard to reach. Everything that we do that's oriented toward trying to get people to sign up for insurance, who are eligible for insurance and can get tax credits and make use of the platform. And so that's events, it's collateral materials, it is some advertising as well, but it's the whole package of promotion and outreach.
Mr. Allen, you might, as long as you're here, explain the consequences of not doing so and the ripple back through your agency if people fail to re-engage in the marketplace.
Sure. Thanks, Chair Johnson. A couple of ways to look at that. From a programmatic standpoint, our job is to make sure people get health insurance so that when they get sick or injured, they've got the ability not to have to push that care off onto others. And so fundamentally, we've got a programmatic drive to get the uninsured rate in Oregon down to the extent that it's related to people who qualify for and can pay for private insurance. There's also just a simple business revenue way of looking at this. The marketplace unit is a business. It only can spend what it takes in revenue, and what we sell, if you will, are health insurance policies. We're funded on a charge of $9.66 per member per month for every policy that we sell, and so, like anything else, if you spend less time on marketing and outreach, fewer people will buy your product, and the revenue goes down, or the number of policies goes down. That drives the revenue down and puts the fiscal health of the program at jeopardy as well.
Representative Whitsitt.
So do we look at that essentially $2.5 million for advertising, marketing, publicity, and promotion every 2 years then, or every year?
Yeah, Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, it's actually $4 million every 2 years, $2 million every year. It's been front-loaded in the way that LFO has staggered the limitation, and the way it's staggered, I'll be reporting back to you with a more detailed. I've got a sheet of paper in the back of the room I can give you some information off of now if you'd like, but we'll be coming back with not only a detailed plan, but a detailed description of how we'll be able to assess effectiveness of anything that we're doing in the outreach area before you'll release the remaining $1.7 million to us.
Representative Whitsitt, I would just bring from the co-chair's perspective, we have had a robust conversation about this. Talked to Senator Devlin, at least I did, and I believe that Representative Gomberg spoke with co-chair Buckley. What we all wanted to avoid were more dancing clouds and girls with ukuleles, so we are quite interested in an efficacious plan with benchmarks to track how many people are re-enrolling. It has been the subject of a lot of conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks. In fact, that's why we started late. Okay, any other questions? Mr. Stainer, continue ahead.
Excellent. That actually, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, that actually ends that that description of that policy package, that budget item for the health insurance marketplace, so we can move forward to the finance and corporate securities division. This again is current service level budget. There's no policy option packages in this program, and we move through the central services division. The central services division has a component in it of the marketplace that we've discussed and went over, so we can move across that. But then, and it also has this piece in it for package 802. It's again moving federal funds expenditure limitation out of other funds and establishing it solely in federal funds. And then the other half of, we talked about moving the non-limited to limited funding for 11 positions out of the workers' benefit fund to other funds. And this is that the other half of that package in central services. This establishes the $2 million in other funds from limited funds and the 11 positions in 10.04 FTE in the central services program. Again, that's a net zero move to the agency as far as their overall budget. And the last program is the Building Codes Division. The Building Codes Division has a policy option package in it, and this policy option package came out of work that was done by the Emergency Board. There were a number of positions limited duration positions that were established by the May 2014 Emergency Board, and rather than making them permanent at that time, those limited duration, the Emergency Board recommended that the agency come back and ask the full legislature for permission to establish those positions if they were still necessary, and LFO is recommending that those four positions be established in this program for $664,000 in other funds. Again, within the Building Codes Division, we see Package 802 moving federal funds expenditure limitation out of other funds, so a reduction in other funds of $227,000 and an establishment of federal funds of $227,000, a net zero move. And those are all of the budget recommendations from LFO.
Colleagues, you have heard Mr. Stainer's presentation of the LFO recommendation. Any questions?
I have a question.
Madam
Chair, you were talking about the evaluation of the effectiveness of the advertising. Does that show up in a KPM anywhere in this budget, or how does that show up?
Mr. Stainer?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, in just a couple of items that we're going to get to, we're going to go through the KPMs, the proposed KPMs, but then there's a budget note that's presented in the to be included with the agency budget that deals specifically with it and leads into a KPM.
Good. I can't wait.
Okay. Mr. Allen, as long as you're up here, any other comments from you?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So we are now going to, do you want to go through the KPMs? You want to do these one motion at a time, or you want to go through the KPMs? Do you want to do it all together?
That would prefer if we just go motion by motion.
Okay, we'll do it motion by motion then. So I would be at this point ready to entertain a motion on the LFO budget presentation.
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the LFO recommendation.
Representative Reed has moved the LFO recommendation to House Bill 5012. Colleagues, any questions, any discussion, any objection? So ordered. Mr. Stainer.
Yes. Excellent. Madam Chair, moving on to performance measures. Attached in your work session documents, you also have the proposed key performance measures forms. The key performance measures were presented during the agency's budget presentation, and those are continued in the 15-17 biennium, and the goals of those KPMs have substantially stayed the same, and the agency is continuing to perform well on each one of their key performance measures.
Thank you. Colleagues, you've heard Mr. Stainer's comments about the agency's performance with respect to their current key performance measures. Mr. Allen, is it critical? Well, Senator Hansel.
Are we, they've got a whole new, like we've been talking about last 30 or 40 minutes, with the insurance program now, or the health program. Do we have any KPM specifically designed for them, or do they fit in under customer service and everything else that they're doing?
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, the answer is no. There are not any proposed KPM specific to the health insurance program at this time. Certainly, they will fit in with the existing customer service key performance measures. The intent of the budget notice following this discussion on key performance measures is to lead the legislature and the agency to develop key performance measures specifically related to the health exchange.
That'd be in the budget notes.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could add,
Mr. Elvin,
the absence of a proposed KPM related to the marketplace is really a creature of the timeline for proposing KPMs. I'd have needed to been a little bit clairvoyant to anticipate the creator, the assignment of the program. We would expect to come back with KPMs with one or more KPMs specific to the actual performance of the marketplace in the development of the 17-19 budget.
Makes sense to me.
Let me do a little bit of translation for our new folks. The budget presentations for the agencies begin way back last summer, and nobody could have anticipated the passage of Senate Bill 1 at that point in time, and so we're a little bit out of sync. I just didn't want you to think that on this important piece of business, Mr. Allen was not fulfilling his fiduciary responsibilities to the agency and his responsibility to report to the legislature, but the timing was just out. The budget work starts so early for agencies, and that's why.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we've discussed the key performance measures, and now with Representative Gomberg, have you caught your breath enough from testifying, or do you want Representative Reed to continue making motions?
I'll let Representative Reed finish things out.
Good. We're at key performance measures, Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Colleagues, you've heard Representative Reed's motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? The KPMs are adopted. Mr. Stainer.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, moving on to the next section, this is a budget note, as we've been alluding to and we've finally gotten to. The budget note that LFO is recommending be included with the agency's budget and report, and I'm just going to read this for you, and then we can answer any questions as we go along. But the budget for the Department of Consumer and Business Services includes funding for marketing outreach efforts. DCBS is instructed to complete a plan and report on each of the publicity and publication campaigns, either upcoming or implemented, for the Health Insurance Marketplace Program. The plan and report must be completed and submitted to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means prior to the beginning of the 2016 legislative session. The plan and report has to include, at a minimum, a narrative description of each campaign, the total amount of biennial expenditures of each campaign, the goals and objectives of each campaign, the expected results of each campaign activity, and the identification of the quantitative measures that directly demonstrate the effectiveness of the campaign with respect to the goals of the campaign. It's the intention of the legislature that the information provided in the plan report is to be used to formulate potential key performance measures related to the expenditure of funds for publication, promotion, and outreach efforts undertaken by the agency. So this budget note, along with the agency's own key performance measures related to the overall performance of the health exchange, will likely come up next during the next budget cycle for approval by this committee.
Okay. And by having passed the key performance measures, it is implicit that we have adopted the budget note, or do you want a separate motion on the budget note?
Separate motion on the budget.
Okay. Madam Chair, may I comment just briefly?
Mr. Allen.
Three things. First, We definitely appreciate the guidance in the budget note. This is the sort of thing around this advertising that we would do, of course, but hearing the messaging from you that it's important is very useful. Two things to bear in mind when we come back in February. At that point, we'll have been operating the program for 8 months, and that includes whatever period of time we go through for, you know, RFPs for outside services and those kinds of things. So I hear the language in the budget note very much as, what are your plans and what are the measures you're going to use? Not come back in February and tell us results, because I candidly won't have a lot to be able to report to you at that time. Also, in the nature of the relationship with the federal government for the platform, there are some weaknesses in data that are kind of built in. Let me give you a real straightforward example. An ordinary marketing campaign would run an ad at 20 minutes after 8 during Dancing with Stars and then watch the website to see how many people clicked through to the website after that ad. We can't currently get that kind of data from the federal government. We'd like to be able to work toward that. They've got great intentions to be able to help us with those kinds of things, but there will be some built-in limitations that our plan that we'll bring back to you in February will need to take into consideration and work around. I just want to be sure that you're aware of those as well. Thank you.
Representative Whitson.
Who will decide what panel or you or whom will decide what these advertising campaigns are going to be, given the disastrous last one that, you know, you had nothing to do with? Are they going to go out for bid, and then who will decide? Will it be what is the least expensive, or what? I mean,
yeah, Senator Johnson, Representative Whitson, the way I would envision this playing out is we would articulate our goals and objectives for what we want. Again, I would say our entire marketing and outreach effort to look like. So, you know, whether it's directly done by us in information fairs and those kinds of things, or ads. For ads, I would articulate what is it we expect to get, do an RFP based on who can deliver that. We would have an eye toward tone for sure. You may be aware of a campaign we've been doing for about the past year or so around insurance advocacy, and I think and I've had conversations with at least a couple of you during the development of that we were very careful to manage the tone of that to keep it public service oriented, not cute oriented, and really aimed at trying to achieve our mission. So that's what we would intend to do with any kind of a program like that. And again, we would expect to come back and have deep conversation with you as we're doing that.
Okay, I just want to follow up. I mean, in the past, I think we had a case of a friend of a friend got a part of this advertising budget, and we just want to make sure that sort of thing doesn't happen.
I don't have any friends. So. We would absolutely do this.
Noted for the record, Director Allen has no friends. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Whitson's question prompted one for me, which is, as much as we can all be frustrated by how things played out to date, and I ask this in a very sincere way, the tone notwithstanding of the previous ads, do we know that those ads were ineffective as much as we have feelings about the tone of them? I just don't know whether they drove people to a site in a process that didn't do what we wanted to, which would mean the ad was effective.
Yeah, Chair Johnson, Representative Reed, I think it's a great question, and I would say the answer certainly is I don't know, and I don't think we corporately know. I think at about the time that effectiveness would have been best to assess, the platform was melting down and not launching, and I think that greatly complicated that. That said, there was something that helped us get 77,000 people signed up last year and 112,000 people signed up this year, and so I think it's fair to say that it's not likely that the campaign had no effect at all, but I don't think there's any metrics available to really assess that.
So one quick comment, Madam Chair. As in business school, I had to guard against a temptation in marketing class, which I think we all suffer from sometimes, in thinking that we are the target market. So as much as we have our own feelings about the tone of things, I hope we'll do our best to stick to the metrics to measure their effectiveness.
Thank you. Colleagues, I might just add that in the current insurance advocacy campaign, Mr. Allen, true to his word, brought copies around to some of us, and we had a chance to look at them. I had commented that I thought one of them was very strident and antagonistic, and I was delighted that Mr. Allen took that constructive criticism and it was modified. And so I just want to verify that he did what he said he did. Okay, so we've heard the budget note. Had the opportunity to discuss any questions about the budget note. Senator Marwood, did you have a question?
Okay. Motion on the budget note.
Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the proposed budget note.
Colleagues, you've heard Representative Reed's motion on the budget note. Any discussion, any questions, any objection? The budget note is adopted. Mr. Stainer, we're going to technical adjustments.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, the final, the next motion or the next recommendation is for the changes to the bill, and the recommended changes to the appropriation bill. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $211,922,732 other funds from the Consumer and Business Services Fund, $32,476,551 other funds from the Health Insurance Exchange Fund set up by Senate Bill 1, $197,626,507 non-limited other funds expenditure, $16,431,816 in federal funds. This includes 962 positions, supporting 952.57 FTE, and that House Bill 5012 be amended accordingly.
Mr. Stainer, what is the date on the presentation packet that you have? Because my numbers are different from yours.
5/11.
I'm working on a 5/7. Yes. I just wanted to make sure because my position numbers are different from yours.
Yes.
Okay.
Mine are the same as what you read.
Right, and I just printed this out early to study it, and I got the wrong ones. So, okay. So, colleagues, I would now entertain the dash two amendments to House Bill 5012.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 5012.
Representative Reed has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 5012. Colleagues, any questions? Any discussions? Any objections? The dash twos are now adopted. Final motion, Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5012 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Reed. Representative Reed has moved the amended House Bill 5012 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. We need carriers. I'll volunteer. Or, do you want it?
Go ahead. I think you'd be better because you're better on top of it.
Okay, I'll do it on the Senate side and to full.
Sure.
And Representative Reed?
Sure. We got the last one too, Madam Chair. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. So we have now concluded that business. I will close the work session on House Bill 5012. And Mr. Stainer, do you have any guidance for us?
Madam Chair, I do not. I don't, I'm not sure exactly what you're doing tomorrow. I apologize.
That's fine. I don't know what we're doing tomorrow either, which is fairly terrible.
I think we don't have a meeting tomorrow.
And would you like to vote?
Yes, why not?
colleagues, I have Representative Reed has made a motion. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and that Representative Gomberg be allowed to vote on House Bill 50. I guess we have to do them separately, 5044.
Thank you. Colleagues, any objection? Representative Gomberg, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gomberg recorded as an aye.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and that Representative Gomberg be allowed to vote on House Bill 50. Oh, actually, he did. He was here for that one.
Yeah,
you already
5012.
Okay.
So we're good.
Yeah, okay. Never
good.
Mind.
Okay. Thank you. In that case, colleagues, anything else for the good of the order? There being nothing, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
There being nothing, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Good of the order?